Down to earth in a language that everybody here can easily understand.
Just because it's late doesn't mean we're done yet.
And that's a pen!
And the quarterback, you kidding me, coach?
There's plenty more hits to dish out.
Well, he really hit the shit out of that one, didn't he? Look at that, he hit the f***ing ball. That gets a free steak.
This is Late Hits on ESPN 97.5, presented by Dr. Jennifer Joseph. Get Physical RX by Dr. Krista Reyes, Texas Sinus and Snoring Audiology, and by BetUS, the original online sportsbook. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, it's Patrick Creighton.
This is the only live and local evening sports radio show in the city of Houston. Late Hits, ESPN 97.5, Patrick Creighton with you. 713-780-3776, 713-780-ESPN on the John Pilson line, on the text line, on the X Twitter at PCreighton1. Josh Mann on the other side of the glass at the master controls at IMJ Chevy on the X Twitter, on the Twitch stream, twitch.tv/ESPN975, ESPN975.com, ESPN975 app, tell Google, tell Alexa, play ESPN975, takes with you everywhere you go. You know you'll wanna. It's a little wet. I mean, I admittedly, I know we need the rain, but I would not mind if the rain would keep itself to between 2 and 6 a.m., which are, of course, normal sleeping hours for me. I would appreciate that. I don't need to drive in it. I don't need to be surrounded by other people who can't drive in it, driving in it. So be safe out there. It's really not raining that hard, but it only takes a couple of drops for people to turn into morons. I can't explain why a couple of raindrops turn normal people into complete morons, but it's like gremlins, you know? Don't put water on them. Can't explain it. Just don't do it. Be safe out there. So we got a lot to get to tonight. In this hour, Bob Nightingale, USA Today, he will join us at 8:15. Sam Kahn Jr. of The Athletic will talk college football in the state of Texas at 8:40. And then, of course, 9:15, we'll talk with Salman Ali, Red Nation Hoops, on the Red Hot Rockets. 9:15, so lots to talk about tonight. Now, one of the things that we've heard come out from Dana Brown over the last few days, one that this is the one that maybe has bothered me the most outside of why the hell hasn't Joe Spada been hired yet. Even more so than outfield's not a priority, or hey, I'm probably not going to have a whole lot of payroll flexibility. This one's a little more annoying to me, because to me this is something that's fully within their control, and it's like they just choose to be foolish about it. So remember during when Dusty had his press conference to retire, well, quote, retire, because while he's retiring, he's also saying that he's not done yet, and he's pissing and moaning about, oh, the media and social media, and people are criticizing me. Like, dude, you go into the Hall of Fame. Why the hell do you care what people have to say about you? You can't be that petty and that thin-skinned when you're coming off a season of Game 7 of the ALCS, and before that you won the World Series. Like, why are you being so butthurt and petty? But you'll remember, Crane talked about, all right, hey, you know, Dana and I are going to handle this. Dana said, you know, we'll have this wrapped up. We expect to have this wrapped up fairly soon. Well, the most recent comments on that are, we hope to have this wrapped up by Thanksgiving. Why are we waiting until Thanksgiving to name a manager? What is the purpose of that? It's not, I mean, if we take Dusty at his word, and we believe the reports that he's been telling people for months this was going to be his last season, you can't tell me they didn't have a short list of ideas of who they wanted to chase after, who they were considering to be the next manager. This wasn't, oh, Dusty retired.
Oh my goodness, what are we going to do? They already knew. They had plenty of time. So if they have plenty of time, why are they unable to make a decision now since the end of the season, going all the way 2 weeks to Thanksgiving? Meanwhile, the Cubs have a new manager. The Guardians, I almost said Indians, the Guardians have a new manager. The Mets have a new manager. The drug dealers, the Angels, they have a new manager. Hell, they've got a new manager in Ron Washington who's basically putting together like an all-star coaching staff. Have you seen his coaching staff? He's putting Torrey Hunter, Eric Young, Clayton Hurt. His coaching staff is like littered with former players who are all pretty good players. Or guys who have been, good coaches in this league. Now, look, I didn't want them to bring in Ron Washington because I don't think they need another old head, old school, don't you frickin' tell me what to do type manager. They just had that with Dusty for the last 4 years, and Dusty couldn't get along with either general manager because Dusty don't want to hear it about analytics, and he doesn't want to hear it from the research department, and he doesn't want to hear it from the general manager. I'll do it, and you shut up. Clearly, that is not the way the Astros want to operate. That's not how James Click wanted to operate. That's not how Dana Brown wants to operate. And if you've listened to Dana speak about Joe Espada, he literally talks like he's going to make this kid the godfather of his child because, he talks about Joe Espada like he is the greatest coach in the world. If you keep talking about this guy so glowingly and he deserves it and he's the only internal candidate, why are you still putzing around? And there's really only one answer for that, and that's Jim Crane. Jim Crane likes bright, shiny things. Jim Crane likes big names. Jim Crane likes stars. Now, honestly, I don't know where the star manager is out there, unless you think you're convincing Tito Francona to not retire. He's had some health issues, which is part of the reason why he's retiring. So where is the star, right? Because, the bench coach in Tampa Bay and the bench coach in Pittsburgh, they're not stars. Now, they're guys who have Astros ties, but they're not stars. And neither one of them have more Astros ties than Joe Spada, who's been the bench coach since 2018. Remember, Joe Spada's been to the LCS every year he's been a bench coach, and he's got a ring. Walt Weiss, bench coach in Atlanta, as a guy who, has a ring as a player, has a ring as a bench coach. Dana, obviously, very familiar with him. I could see him being a name, but Walt Weiss is a good name, but I don't think he's a huge name. As far as managers go, he's not Terry Francona. I don't want Buck Showalter. We know what Buck Showalter is. He's a good baseball man. He's a good manager, but he never gets the girl at the dance. Hell, there have been multiple teams that have won the World Series the year after he left. The Yankees and the Diamondbacks. And, you expect, maybe the Mets will be better next year, but considering they have an owner who could basically buy out any two other owners in baseball, they decided they were not going to meet the asking price on Craig Counsell. So maybe after his $350 million flop, maybe Stevie Cohen's a little gun-shy about spending money this year. How much money did the Mets lose last year? I'm going to say, I don't think they actually lost money, but I'll say they didn't make a whole lot. Because they probably made somewhere in that $400+ million between their, their RSN deals, their tickets, which are not cheap, everything they did, but they stunk. They stunk. So if everybody can figure out what they're going to do, why is it that the Astros, one of the smartest teams in baseball, can't figure out what they're going to do? What is the point? Is there a point? Is there a purpose? Or is this the owner's just not overly happy with his choices because he wants some kind of big star and it's not there? To me, this is very much like last season. James Click didn't get fired or basically asked to leave because the team needed a new direction, because the team needed a new philosophy. They just won the World Series. Like, they didn't need a new direction, new philosophy. He wasn't welcome back because he couldn't get along with Dusty, and he had lost the owner's confidence in a relationship, not by his job efforts. Crane just didn't like him because, you know, really, it kind of goes back to he wanted Starling Marte, and James Click got scared of the deep water. And rather than go to Crane and say, all right, look, this is where the money is, you ready to do this, he just passed. And it ticked off the owner. And he never figured out how to repair the relationship. That's just James Click not being good at relationship management. There was no issue with his job performance. He didn't know how to handle Crane, and he couldn't get along with Dusty. So now Dana Brown comes in, and Dusty can't get along with him either. If you're Jim Crane, how many times do you want to do this? Yeah, my manager and my GM are going to bang heads all the time, but, you know, we're going to try to win anyway. You got it once. Don't tempt fate like you're going to do this for four more years. If Joe Espada is the guy that Dana Brown is advocating for, let your GM make the damn hire. That's why you have baseball people, so they make baseball decisions. And you can go back to, you know, whatever your energy company is where you made your billions and billions of dollars. All right, Bob Nightingale, USA Today, is going to join us next. Before we hit the break, we're going to give away some free stuff. So, this Saturday, it's homecoming for the Houston Cougars. They're coming off a very exciting win in overtime over the Baylor Bears. Want to bring all that energy back to TDECU Stadium this weekend. There's a ticket special for this game, just $15 for tickets. Get your family and friends, get your tickets at uhcougars.com/tickets or call 713-GO-COUGS. Get your tickets today. Come early, enjoy all the new activities at Cougar Alley in front of the stadium, including the huge LED TV screen, the Bud Light backyard, and more. Right now, caller number 3, 713-780-3776, gets a pair of tickets to go see the Cougs this weekend. Caller number 3, 713-780-3776. Let it.
ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Dude.
Have you paid your dues, Jack? Yes, sir. The check is in the mail.
This is Late Hits on ESPN 97.5, presented by Dr. Jennifer Joseph, Get Physical Rx, by Dr. Krista Reyes, Texas Sinus and Snoring Audiology, and by BetUS, the original online sportsbook. From the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Patrick Creighton.
All right, so we talked to Bob. Bob's going to join us at 9:30. He's got something that came up, so appreciate his flexibility here. If something came up, then, you know, we might have some new news, something breaking coming very shortly. Because I've known Bob for, I don't know, 14 years, and it is unlike him to say, hey, listen, can we try this again in like an hour or so? So if he is if he needs to get back to him at 9:30, then he's obviously working on something. So there could be some kind of new news coming out rather soon. So we'll talk to Bob at 9:30 now instead. But it lets us a chance to keep talking about the Astros here for a little bit. Because you know what? Listening to what Dana Brown has said as far as what their priorities are and aren't, how much money they're going to have. With Dana Brown today, listen, I'm not anticipating a whole lot of financial flexibility, but then gave you the, but I know Jim Crane will spend whatever it takes to win. And we've seen this before from Crane. Where I mean, look, Crane always treats that first tax line like it's a hard cap. But then at the deadline, if there is a big splash move that he can make that he thinks will push the team over the top, he will spend the money for that. He just so far has not really been willing to be over the first tax line going into a season. So if the Astros are going to retool and they are going to be looking to take back the world title that they ceded to their interstate rivals this year, how are they going to do that if, well, they don't have a ton of money and their priorities, A, outfield is not a priority. They are not going to look to go get a big bat to share left field DH with Yordan Alvarez. You heard Dana say it's not a priority. That would indicate, they're going to kind of stick with the late season rotation they had, before Michael Brantley came back, which was, Chaz in center and Yordan in left, or Dubon in center, Chaz in left when Yordan DHs. They are banking on the fact that the changes that Mauricio Dubon made in his swing and in his body are going to stay permanent. And maybe they will. I mean, he's a young enough player that it could be that way. And Dubon did have a pretty good season. And he won a gold glove as a utility man. I think more for his work at second base than for his work in center field. But still, he's an excellent, versatile defender. He makes a lot of contact. You need guys like that in the lineup. And he's not a big power hitter. But he was solid. He was okay. Nobody looked at Mauricio Dubon's season this year and said, oh man, this guy's trash. Now, he shouldn't be confused with an elite player at any given position. He has 720 OPS. Now, he had 10 homers, which for him, right? 10 homers to him, it's career high. And he had 26 doubles, 3 triples. He had a low on base, and he's never had a high on base. He hit 278, but he had 309 on base. He doesn't walk. He could steal some bases. And 720 OPS is probably around league average. But they like his versatility, and if he's going to be that guy who's, figure he's got to be, Justin Verlander's personal center fielder. Or maybe that goes away, but I doubt it because, if they're going to bring Moldy back as a backup catcher, he's going to be Justin Verlander's personal catcher. Yeah, the guy who is going to be most placated by keeping Maldonado around is Verlander. And his age, his status, they're going to cater to Verlander as much as they can. That's right, because Yordan will DH, and they'll have Dubon and Chaz in the outfield. They'll play their better defense in the outfield. But it also means you're not spending money in the outfield. and Martin Maldonado is a backup catcher. What did Maldi make this year? $4 million as a starter. So as a backup catcher, he's not going to make more money. He's going to make the same or less. Now, they need another starter. You heard him say Lance McCullers Jr., Louis Garcia, and speaking of Dana Brown, that those guys probably not expected back until July of next year. Now, Garcia's coming off of Tommy John. There's no way to pinpoint what that timetable is going to be because you have no idea will he have a setback or not. With Lance McCullers Jr., you can almost guarantee he will have a setback because he always has setbacks. They will need to get another starter. And Jordan Montgomery would fit the bill perfectly. I wanted them to trade for him as far back as May because the Cardinals were out of it early. But for whatever reason, the Astros were very, very slow in the trade market this year. It took Jim Crane getting involved after the Junk Grabbers traded for Max Scherzer. It took Jim Crane getting involved to pull off the deal for Verlander, and that basically involves the Mets paying 70% of Verlander's salary. This past year, this coming year, and then if Verlander's vesting option hits, they're going to pay that too. So, look, they got Verlander bought and paid for by the Mets. A shrewd move by Crane, but the point is, they waited until the very, very end to do anything. Whereas the Junk Grabbers were extremely active. And they made a lot of deals, including getting Jordan Montgomery, who was terrific for them down the stretch and unbelievable in the postseason. That's exactly the kind of guy you'd like to see in the Astros rotation. But if the Astros aren't going to spend money on an outfielder, you know, they don't want to pay big money on an outfielder, the backup catcher market, not that great. Not a lot of players. So keeping a guy who's an established team leader, not such a bad idea. But you gotta upgrade this pitching staff. Fromber took a step backwards from June on. Christian Javier took a step backwards. J.P. France ran out of gas at the end of the season. Jose Urquidy was hurt again. And he is inconsistent, not just game to game, but literally pitch to pitch. His velocity fluctuates so much. He's had the same shoulder injury 3 times in 3 seasons. It's not just going to get better. At some point, Jose Urquidy is going to need surgery. You don't keep hurting your shoulder and then, you know, it's fine. You don't miss as much time as he's missed and it's just fine. He's a walking injury. So they're going to need to go get another starter. And I also expect that Spencer Arrighetti's probably going to get a shot in spring training to show if he's ready to pitch the major league level. But they need a starter, and Montgomery would be perfect. But for a team that doesn't have a whole lot of flexibility, the best way to be economically sharp and get the most impact for your money is to rebuild the pen. Build a monster lockdown bullpen. And that's where, you know, it makes sense to go out and get a guy like a Josh Hader. Because could you imagine the back of the bullpen being Presley, Hader, and Abreu? The game just became 6 innings. And that is an incredible, unrivaled back of the pen. And you supplement that with some lower cost, reliable veteran arms, guys like Matt Moore, another lefty, guys like David Robertson, still throwing gas and striking guys out. And then you consider that bullpen, Presley, Hader, Abreu, Moore, Robertson, Graveman. That's the best pen in baseball. And when you have monster offensive teams, you don't like the junk grabbers who, like, these guys feast on teams' underbellies of pen. Your pen doesn't have an underbelly. Your pen's got guys who throw gas, 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 and gas. I mean, the guy probably throwing the softest is Presley, and he's got the nastiest curveball of anybody in the back of the bullpen in the league. Guys like Moore and Robertson aren't going to break the bank. They're not going to cost that much, and they're going to be short-term deals. But you know, Crane loves short-term deals. Hader, you got to pay. But Hader's still cheaper to pay than an Aaron Nola, than a Blake Snell, than any kind of big offensive home run hitting outfielder. And that's how you maximize the value of your dollars and improve your pitching overall. You shorten the game. The Astros have a lot of pitchers that only go five innings. Right? Fromber goes deep and Verlander will go deep. But the rest of the guys is five innings. Well, if you've got guys like Robertson and Moore and Graveman coming in the sixth, Abreu, Hader, Presley, you've completely changed the dynamic of the game. Now, if your starter gets into trouble, you can bring in Montero for a couple of innings, and then you're right into your lockdown guys. You never have to have a guy, quote, take one for the team and just get blasted because you've got enough depth on your in your bullpen to take out your starter early, get some innings from Graveman and Montero, and then get into the lockdown guys who are gonna take you home. Your pitcher's, you know, he's got given up a three spot in the first inning. You don't have to see if it's going to be a six. You get out of lockdown bullpen and you shorten the game. Teams got to score early because they're not going to score late. And what do we know about the Astros? They score a lot of runs late. Now, we're going to take a break here. We'll have a short segment, then we'll talk with Sam Kahn Jr. of The Athletic, talk some State of Texas college football on the other side. Late Hits.
ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. We're your daddy.
Well, I feel like I'm your daddy.
You're not my daddy. No,
daddy. Hush, now I'm your daddy.
You ain't my daddy, boy.
Yes, I am.
No, you are not our daddy.
I am your daddy.
Not our daddy.
Late Night Houston Sports Talk only happens here. It's Late Hits with Patrick Creighton. Presented by Dr. Jennifer Joseph. Get Physical RX. By Dr. Krista Reyes, Texas Sinus and Snoring Audiology. And by MedUS. From the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Patrick Creighton.
Man, on Twitter, Brother Bear said, you know, the idea of Presley, Hader, and Abreu reminded him of the years where the Astros had Lidge, Dotel, and Wagner. Man, Octavio Dotel was stolen by the Astros. They got Octavio Dotel with Roger Cedeno and a minor leaguer, Kyle Kessel, like nobody cares about, for Mike Hampton, who was a pending free agent, and Derek Bell, who was washed. The Mets got 1 year of Hampton and Bell, and that's it. They were gone. Mike Hampton went off, took big money from the Colorado Rockies, which I'm sure he regretted, and Derek Bell, like I said, Derek Bell was washed. Derek Bell was out of baseball after 2001, and that deal was for the 2000 season. So Derek Bell had that season and one more, and he was out of baseball. Octavio Dotel, well, he gave the Astros, what, 4.5 seasons before got traded to Oakland? And, man, he was, Octavio Dotel threw some gas. He had 552 strikeouts in 449 innings for the Astros. Not too shabby. Somebody else asked about, you know, what happens if Maldi's back and Fromber and Javier start bitching they want to pitch to Maldi. Well, here's the bottom line. Both of those guys stunk it up for a good portion of this year. I think Fromber, when he pitches at home, and Yordan plays left because they like that, you know, Yordan in left field is the ground ball pitcher. Yiner can play DH. And Maldi can get some extra reps behind the plate where he can catch Fromber part-time. He will catch JV full-time. He'll catch Fromber part-time. Javier, after the year he just had, he can shut the hell up. You do not have the cachet to demand who your personal catcher is. Sorry. You haven't earned it. You certainly didn't earn it this year. Maldi ain't going to be around forever. You better get used to Yiner catching you. Also, considering how slow Javier is to the plate, he wants Yiner behind the dish because he pops out faster and he's got a bigger arm. It is very hard to nail runners with Christian Javier on the mound because an ice age passes by the time he gets through his windup. So if Javier bitches, he better have a 2-3 ERA. But realistically, every metric says Yiner's a better catcher, offensively, defensively. This isn't even debatable. This is math. You know, Maldi's on the bench. Maldi can help prepare pitchers before the game, whether he's starting or not. He doesn't need to start to help prepare the pitcher for the game. So, they're going to have to learn to live without Martín Maldonado, who does want to be a manager when his playing days are over. Just stick that in the back of your hat, that when Maldi's career is up, he wants to manage. All right, we're going to talk with Sam Kahn Jr. of The Athletic, State of Texas College Football. We'll talk Longhorns, we'll talk Aggies, we'll talk Cougs, and more next.
ESPN 97.5 and 92.5, the only sports radio on FM in Houston. Back to the Veritex Community Bank Studios, it's Late Hits with Patrick Creighton. Presented by Dr. Jennifer Joseph, Get Physical RX, by Dr. Krista Reyes, Texas Sinus and Snoring Audiology, and by MedUS.
Joining us right now on the HRMP guest line, he is the college football expert, senior college football writer with The Athletic. He's our buddy Sam Kahn Jr. What's going on, Sam?
How much? How are you doing?
Doing good, brother. It was good to talk with you. Talk some college football here in the state of Texas, where there are 11 billion D1 programs and at least five that we're going to talk about tonight. We will start with Texas Longhorns. The sixth-ranked Texas Longhorns will be getting their quarterback this week. Quinn Ewers will play this week. Look, their offense obviously is a lot different when Quinn Ewers plays versus when Malik Murphy plays. Can the Longhorns avenge their loss? Can they win the Big 12 and get into the CFP as a one-loss Big 12 champ?
Yeah, I think so. I don't think there's any scenario in which a 12-1 Texas gets left out of the playoff. I know there was some discussion on Tuesday night after the rankings came out about, well, what if Alabama were to go 12-1 and upset Georgia? And what if it was the last spot was down to Texas and Alabama? I think it would be really interesting to see, but that head-to-head win that Texas has against Alabama, I think, is going to carry the day. And it wasn't just a fluke win or a close win. It was won by double digits. I mean, they won by 10, and they finished that game running the ball and possessing the ball the last 7 minutes. And that win looks better by the week as Alabama used to win. And to my, in my opinion, that Texas has one of the best wins on its resume that, of anybody in the country at this point. So with that, they're also 3-1 at this point against ranked teams right now. They beat Alabama, they beat Kansas State, and then Kansas is also ranked as well. So I think a 12-1 Texas team will make it. I guess the question is can they make it? But I do think the schedule they have left is pretty manageable. They got TCU this weekend, a road game at Iowa State, which might be a little tricky going to Ames in November, and then they come home for Texas Tech, and of course they'll have to finish in the Big 12 championship. But right now, getting Quinn Ewers back this weekend, I think is huge, and this team with defense the way it's playing, I think they have a really good shot.
Do you expect Ewers to declare at the end of the year?
I'm sorry, what was that?
Do you expect Ewers to declare for the NFL draft at the end of the year?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think it just depends. I think he and his camp probably envision this year going, him having a breakout year and then declaring. I do wonder how the injury plays into that and how he looks coming off the injury. I think how he looks this weekend, how he looks the next few weeks is going to play a role in that decision. I do know that you talk to NFL scouts and they love the arm talent, and he's really has started to show some things and answer some questions that I think were unanswered coming into this year about how whether he could get sharper on the deep ball, whether he could get more accurate. He had 4 straight games of 70%+ completion rate before he got injured. That's the longest streak he's had of that, and it's the best, most accurate he's been. So I think there's a lot to like about him. But I do think there are still some more questions answered on whether that consistency is there. And also, with it being a right shoulder injury that he had against Houston, how healthy is that? What's that look like? But if he leads them to the playoff and has a strong last 4 or 5 weeks, yeah, I think there's certainly a possibility that he considers that.
Now, Sam, they went to Malik Murphy in his absence. They go to Murphy because Murphy is a better quarterback than Arch Manning, or do they go to Murphy because they don't want to go to Arch Manning until it's Arch's time and they're not going to take the ball back from him? I mean, imagine if I feel like if they went to Arch Manning and Manning plays well, how do you take the ball away from him? And now you've kind of sabotaged Ewers. Is that part of the thought process, or did they think that Murphy's just better than Manning right now?
No, I think it really comes down to experience and reps. Malik Murphy has spent almost 2 full seasons now working in this offense. He knows it a little bit better. He's a bigger guy. He understands the system a little bit more, and he's a tremendous physical talent. Let's not forget this is the first high school quarterback signee Sarkisian signed when he got to Texas. He tried to get Quinn Ewers. When he first got the job, Quinn, of course, went to Ohio State, and then he signed Malik Murphy, and then Quinn transferred back to Texas. So this is a guy that Sark has believed in for a long time. He's from Southern California, with similar roots to Sark. They understand each other. I think there's a real trust there and a belief in Malik. And when you see him throw the deep ball and you see some of the flashes of his talent, you understand why. But I think there's a sense to not rush Arch because you're talking about a big step up in competition level, like the level that he played at in Louisiana. He was at a private school, and he was not necessarily playing against Division I talent every year. Certainly not the talent that maybe Malik Murphy was seeing in California. And so I think there's a little bit of adjustment period. True freshman, you don't want to. And any time, I think, really in any position, you don't want to throw a true freshman out there before you have to. If he's ready. Ready to go? Sure, go for it. But if you can help it, and you don't have to throw him out there I think it's better for everybody, unless that guy's just a no-brainer ready to play. And I think they've been really careful with Arch in terms of how they've been bringing him along. And they wanted to get him in earlier this year. They wanted to get him in against Rice in the season opener. I think in a perfect world, they would have liked to have get him in once or twice since then. But it just hasn't worked out just because they haven't. You know, they've had some leads, but by time, it would be time to bring him in. You know, you're talking about just handing off and running the ball. And I think they'd want to get him in to let him throw the ball around a little bit. So I don't think it's necessarily, you know, hey, we give it to him and then it creates an issue. I think it's more of, is he ready and is this the right situation to bring him?
Sam, the Cougs got a very exciting win last week over Baylor after they got trounced by K-State. What do you expect for them for this week? And how hot is Dana's seat right now?
You know, I think the win over Baylor certainly helped. And you really look at it, three of the last four games they've played pretty well. They played really well against West Virginia and, you know, had a rough, you know, last 5-7 minutes and then had to win it on a Hail Mary. They played really well against Texas and came really close to pulling that one out. Then they have the clunker against K-State. But then they go into Baylor and get a road win. And you really got to like the fight that they showed and Dana Holgorsen having the guts to call go for two there at the bottom of the first overtime. I thought it was the right call. I thought it was a great play call, you know, go spreading it out and going to Donovan Smith and letting him take it in. I thought it was really good. I think if Houston would like to stay pat if they can, I think because I do think they like what they've built from a roster standpoint, and they know Dana's been in the Big 12 before, and this is, look, Houston has struggled, yes, but so has every other newcomer in the Big 12. BYU, Cincinnati, UCF, and Houston, their combined record against Big 12 competition is 5-19. And Houston's got two of those wins. So the other three newcomers have combined for three wins against Big 12 teams. So I think there's a little bit of an understanding from an administrative standpoint, a leadership standpoint, that this is a tough transition for everybody. Playing against a Big 12 competition every week is challenging. You take time to build up a roster for that. And I know there's frustration from the fan base because you'd hope they'd be further along at this point. But I do think that these next few weeks are going to be really critical. Beating Cincinnati this weekend is going to be really important because Cincinnati, I think, has been one of the worst teams in the Big 12. You have that game at home. This is a game at Houston. You should win this game. I think getting to a bowl game would be really big for Dana. I think it would be really big for that program if they can win two of these last three and get there. And I think it's doable. If you beat Cincinnati and you split those last two against Oklahoma State and UCF, you can get there. And I think if you do that and you finish 6-6, then I think Dana's safe. It's if they fall short, I think it's a question of, you know, what are those losses? How do they look? How competitive are they? Is it something that looks like what you saw against Texas where it comes down to the wire, or is it something that looks like K-State where you get dominated from start to finish? I think those are big questions that have to be answered in the next few weeks, and how they look in the next few weeks I think is going to determine a lot.
Sam Kahn, the college football expert, senior college football writer with The Athletic, joining us on the HRMP guest line. Sam, how much of the Aggies missed Connor Wegman?
I think they do, certainly. I mean, he's a five-star quarterback. I mean, anybody who watched him, certainly people in this area who were able to watch him when he was at Bridgeland, understand what kind of talent he is. But I don't think the issues are just on quarterback. I think Max Johnson is a capable guy. You know, he won games as an SEC starter at LSU. He's won games as an SEC starter at A&M. I think the issues at A&M, I think, go far beyond that, that they really have struggles protecting him, that they're last in the SEC this year in pressure rate that they allow on the quarterback, and they've been last each of the last three seasons in the SEC in that. That's been, the offensive line has been a consistent issue. And I just see some disturbing trends overall in this program. They haven't won a road game since 2021. The last time they won a road game was more than 2 years ago in Missouri. They don't win close games. They've lost seven games by one score, seven games in a row that are one-score games. And that's the longest streak in the nation of that. So they're not finishing games. They're 11-14 against Power 5 opponents the last 3 years. It's to me, it's more than just the quarterback thing. The quarterback thing is an issue, and they've lost quarterback to injuries each of the last three seasons too. So there is some bad luck in that, but they've got too much talent, in my opinion, to be sitting here at 5-4 and 3-3 in the SEC. They have the fourth most talented roster in the country, according to 247, if you look at the team talent composite. And when you watch them play, when you watch the guys get off the bus and you watch them run around, those guys are super talented. I can't understand why they're sitting here at 5-4 and struggling to win games if they should. I thought they should have beaten Tennessee. Alabama was a game that obviously Jalen Milroe threw it all around, but I thought it was a game they were in and very much had a chance to win. And Ole Miss obviously is one came down to the end there, but you know, you start slow in that one and that hurts you. And again, I think you lose to a team in Ole Miss that is talented, but it's a team that you have more talent than, and not a game you should be losing. So yes, they do miss Wegman, and there is a difference, and certainly if he's there, maybe does he make a difference in one or two of those games? Possibly. And maybe that changes the trajectory of this season. But to me, they've got too much talent. I think that Max Johnson is good enough for them to win with, but something's not translating.
You know, adding Petrino was a controversial move in the offseason, and Jimbo trying to, you know, improve the offense. So far through this season, you said 5-4. What is your impression of the Petrino offense?
Yeah, but it started really well, and you saw some signs early on. They were, you know, picking the tempo up a little bit. They were scoring a little quicker. And then it just seems like the last few weeks, they kind of reverted back to what we saw last season. They got a lot of slow-developing plays in the pass game, which is not ideal when you're talking about a line that has struggled protecting in the pass game. I don't see as many easy throws and things quick to get it out to your playmakers that would ease some of the pressure on Max Johnson and get the ball in the hands of Evan Stewart, to get the ball in the hands of Nia Smith. I started to see a little bit of it last week, and Nia Smith, they actually handed the ball off to him last week as a running back, which they did 2-3 years ago, and I haven't seen it very much since, and I've wondered why. So maybe they are trying to get a little creative, but you'd like to see some more pre-snap motion. You'd like to see just a little bit more creativity in general. You know, I thought I saw a lot of that early in the season, and I don't know why, but it doesn't seem to be as prevalent now. And they've got to do something to fix it because they've got talent. They've got 4- and 5-star receivers all over the place. They got 4-star running backs in the backfield. They got all kinds of talent all over the place. They've just got to figure out a way to get the ball to their guys and get things developing a little bit quicker with that line struggling the way it is.
Sam, there's been a lot of conversation in the media about Jimbo's job being on the line. He's owed a gazillion dollars. Would they really pull the trigger and pay a monster buyout? And if they did, who could be on the short list to replace him?
I don't think they want to. I really don't, because of how much money it costs. But it's going to be fascinating to watch how these next few weeks transpire, because I think they have to play well. They have to play better because the mood from the fan base is obviously pretty bad right now. It's a pretty despondent fan base because, again, just like the things I mentioned, 7 straight losses in 1-score games. They haven't won a road game, 9 road losses in a row in 3 road games. The direction of the program ever since that contract extension was signed has not been very good. And you run the risk of squandering a lot of talent that you have. Like, they signed the number one recruiting class in 2022, and every program that has signed the number one recruiting class dating back to 2011 has won a national championship with that recruiting class, except I think 2021 Alabama signed number one class. They haven't done it quite yet, and then at A&M at 22. But from 2011 to 2020, every number one recruiting class has won a national championship. A&M seems light years away from doing that right now. And the tricky part is Jimbo is a terrific recruiter. He is the one who has assembled all this talent. But if you can't win with it, what do you do? So considering how much they owe him, which if they were to make a move after this season, they'd owe him $77 million, which is massive. And it's not even just that money, but you're also talking about a new staff. You're talking about a first-year staff that if you replace it all, you're going to have to spend another probably $15 to $18 million on a new head coach plus the assistant coach staff. So not only are you paying that buyout, but you're also paying whatever money it takes to get the new coaching staff in. So I think in their heart of hearts, they'd like to not have to make that move financially. But if they lose to Mississippi State this weekend, or they lose to LSU in a few weeks, the mood's not going to be good. And with Texas and Oklahoma on the way to the SEC in 2024, and Texas playing the way it is, you know, there's always kind of a, you know, in that rivalry, there's always an eye from each program looking at what the other one's doing. You have to wonder if some of what's going on Austin kind of increases the sense of urgency that's going on at A&M right now.
Now, the Rice Owls, you know, in their first year in the American, they're 4-5. They're 2-3 in conference. They have a big win over UH earlier in the year. The last two games, they've lost very tough games. They lost by 2 points to Tulane, who's ranked. They lost by 5 last week to SMU, JT Daniels. JT Daniels has given them the best quarterback play they've had in a very long time. But he gets hurt in that game, has a concussion, misses half the game. They lose. He will not play this week against UTSA, who's 5-0 in conference. Is the JT Daniels injury, if that keeps them out of a bowl game, does that keep Mike Bloomgren from coming back?
That'd be interesting, because it's so hard to tell. Because one thing I would say about this Rice team, if you watch them the last few years and you watch them this year, you can tell how much better this team is. And JT, like you said, is a big part of it. Just having a consistent, competent quarterback has just done wonders for them offensively. They're able to score quick. They're able to move the ball downfield. They're able to score in crucial points in the game. And if he doesn't get hurt against South Florida earlier in the year, do they end up winning that game? If he doesn't get hurt against SMU, do they end up winning that game? You know, and even without him, they were still very much in position and had the ball with a chance to do it late in the game. You watch how they play defensively, and they've gotten better up front. The receivers have been terrific. You can see the job they've done recruiting in the roster. This is even though the record doesn't seem to show it, this team is so much more competitive, and they're better than they have been in the past few years. And so, yeah, the bowl game, I think, was the benchmark for Bloomgren and for this program to move forward. And if you miss it because of the injury, yeah, I think you have to take that into consideration. But you also have to take into account, can you replace Daniels, and is this success sustainable? Can you continue to do this? Because obviously, this is Daniels' last year. I think, you know, I talked to him before the season. He says, I think he's out of eligibility anywhere, but even if he wasn't, he's like, this is it. I'm done after this. I'm going, you know, he's going to go pro after this season is over. You know, he wants to try his hand at the next level. So they've got to find another quarterback. A.J. Padgett, you know, Chase Jenkins, the two young guys they have, pretty talented guys. You like what you've seen of both so far. So can one of those guys really keep that level of play high and keep them competitive in this conference? And is what they've done enough to keep some enthusiasm and some success there? It would just be a lot better if they just got to a bowl, I think. It would do a lot for Bloomgren and this program moving forward. But, yeah, it's a great question. It's going to be fascinating to watch unfold.
He's Sam Collin Jr., the college football expert, senior college football writer at The Athletic. Follow him on X, Twitter, at SCon Jr. Sam, always appreciate you, my man. Thank you for taking some time with us today. We'll talk soon, bro.
No problem. Thanks for having me. You take care.
All right, Sam Collin Jr. of The Athletic with us here on Late Hits.
ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Everyone loves our chicken pot pie.
Chicken pot, chicken pot, chicken pot pie.